powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy
on Seattle Sports Station.
Powered by Kitsap Credit Union. Streaming through the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Oh, happy Thursday, everyone. Can I just say, this has nothing to do, nothing
happy
to do.
Thursday.
Happy Thursday, first of all. I do, we have a fun show planned for you, which I say every day, but every day I absolutely mean it. I promise I mean it. And we're going to talk about the not so great, no good, very bad outing by Robbie Ray. Quickly before we get to it, I want to issue a correction, which is that our show does not co-sign, condone, or stand by the decision of the show prior to us, it shall not be named, deciding not to include Dairy Queen in its list of top queens.
To me, this is absolutely, absolutely one of the biggest mistakes that has been made on this station.
Correct.
In the history of this station.
In the history of the city, arguably.
I mean, there was the whole saltwater, freshwater debacle that happened. You know,
I mean,
Curtis was there for that.
Yeah, look, you were wrong.
Me and my truth, that's what matters.
That's right. That's exactly
Well, I mean, if you're going to have a show, if you're going to have a segment called Ranked, and you're going to rank queens, and you
don't
put
include Dairy Queen, get out.
I mean, honestly.
So anyway, we just want to
retire the segment.
We want to start our show by making it clear we don't condone that behavior. We don't appreciate that, and
exactly.
and we will not stand for it. So we are here to kind of course correct is how I'm looking at it. To course correct your day.
Don't be angry at all of us because we don't all agree.
Right, that's right. That's
with,
exactly right.
With those opinions, okay?
Yes, blizzards forever. So I want to get to this game now. The Mariners fell to the Orioles in game two of that series, 9-2. Gross, no one likes it. We're still Robbie Ray, your ace, gave up 4 runs on 6 hits, walked 3 over 5 innings pitched. Scott Service said he is clearly, he being Robbie Ray, frustrated.
The veteran guys have been around, you know, when you give up the big 300 homer early, right away, his goes into the mindset, okay, I'm going to shut him down from here and get our team a chance to get back in. And I think he was frustrated. Just he had the 2 quick outs, and then he wasn't able to stop it in the 5th to get us back in there to hit. So, you know, Robbie's stuff is fine. I thought the velocity was up early in the ball game tonight. It was hot and humid out there, no doubt. When you have an extended inning, you know, it can take some out of you. But frustration's normal. He's a really good competitor, and, you know, disappointed he wasn't able to give us a clean 5th.
I like to have some themes of the show once in a while. For instance, the theme, if there were a theme of today's show, in addition to the theme of every show, which is to have fun, it would be the very curious conundrum of Robbie Ray. That would be the theme of today's show and where I'm going to start this conversation, because here's the deal, Jake. The Mariners made the right decision when they signed Robbie Ray. Curtis, I don't think you would disagree with this either. You were the one that pointed it out, that signing Robbie Ray was the right call, and 10 out of 10 times where we all, you know, thrown back into free agency, we'd say absolutely yes.
Oh, yeah. Any contending team in the American League would want to add the reigning Cy Young Award winner. Why wouldn't you not? I mean, this is a guy coming off the best season of his career. He's left-handed. He's been a top-of-the-rotation guy in the past. Mm-hmm. This was a move that every team would have made. And the Mariners miraculously were able to beat out every team, and maybe they had to throw an extra couple dollars his way, but yeah, it hasn't worked out. But is that to say that it was a bad signing for the Mariners? I don't think so. I think I would have made this signing every single time.
Yes.
I would have too. And this is an opportunity for you to legitimately upgrade your rotation. And even if Robbie Ray wasn't a Cy Young winner, you're still expecting him to, you know, come out and perform in terms of giving you good quality starts and giving you competitive outings and giving you a chance to win ball games. And so far up to this point, unfortunately for Robbie Ray, he has not been able to consistently provide that level of play for the Mariners. And it has been incredibly frustrating to watch because we, you know, gave that amazing stat for the audience in terms of how erratic and how random these, you know, outings have been for Robbie Ray, where he is pretty much shut down for the majority of the time he is out there on the mound, except for that one inning. There's always that one inning.
The inning trademark.
Yes, the inning. We are all on the inning watch because you never know when it's going to happen. And for Robbie Ray, unfortunately, the inning gets started by him losing command. He loses command for an entire inning. Walks guys, puts people on base, and then somebody goes out and mashes a home run. And I don't know why that happens to him and why it has consistently happened to him through the course of a game, but then he goes out and he strikes out everybody. Like, I just don't understand how you can be such a dominant strikeout pitcher and yet be so susceptible to, you know, really getting shelled one inning per game. It's really perplexing.
Well, and ultimately, I think there are many people who would tell you that they expected that Robbie Ray would be great. One of those people, MLB expert, right? MLB insider Jeff Passan for ESPN told Mike Salk during an interview with him that he felt that that Robbie Ray was going to be kind of the 2021 version.
Robbie Ray's not been good this year. I mean, when you were projecting, and I say you as a stand-in for me, the Mariners to be really good, I thought that they were going to have 2021 Robbie Ray and not 2015 through 2020 Robbie Ray.
I thought they were going to have 2021 Robbie Ray, and Robbie Ray hasn't been horrible. The problem is he hasn't looked like a Cy Young winner, which is who you signed. But again, this is the conundrum. We've talked about how the Mariners did not do enough in the offseason and how the Mariners typically have not opened their wallet. I know some people would disagree with me. I would tell you that I disagree with you, that overwhelmingly they typically have not opened up the wallet and really gone for it. And when they have, they haven't really completed the roster building. You know what I mean? Like, they added one or two big names and then they didn't continue to add. So I digress. What makes it a conundrum is that they made the right choice. They made the right choice to sign Robbie Ray. I hope it does not discourage them from signing superstars moving forward. But how do you move forward this year when you're trying to contend with a guy who's underperforming? Now, obviously, Robbie Ray is going to stay on your roster. He's going to remain your ace. But right now, I mean, I was listening to Mike Salk earlier, and he was talking about how this team would be at a different place if Robbie Ray and Jesse Winker were playing up to expectations. I think this team would be at a different place if, again, they would have done more in the offseason, and they would have not leaned so much on two guys, one guy becoming a repeat Cy Young winner and another guy hitting like he did in a much more hitter-friendly park.
Right.
That being said, he's not ultimately wrong in that, you know, a much better version of Robbie Ray, it was fair to expect.
Yes, it is. It is fair to expect, and that's the thing that's been so frustrating, though, Stacey, is that Robbie Ray, outside of the inning, has been good. So that's why it's so hard to look at Robbie Ray and be like, "How do you fix this? How do you change this? How do you get this back on track?" And and Robbie Ray himself, you go to cut three, and I'm sure he's just as frustrated because. To him, according to him, everything feels good.
Yeah, I mean, it could probably cut back on the walks, three walks tonight, just not acceptable. But, ultimately, I feel like everything feels good. Everything feels like it's coming out of my hand. It's really good. So, like I said, trust the process and trust that it's going to turn.
I mean, for Robbie Ray, what else can he say, right? What else can he say in the moment? But it is frustrating to hear that. You know, it's like, yeah, you got to trust the process. You're 100% right, Robbie, but like, fix it. You know, that's what you want. You want to be able to have that and for him to be able to cut back on those walks, be able to cut back on that, you know, inning that really puts the team in a hole. And you should expect more from somebody like Robbie Ray. Now, I think that, you know, he's not going to go in and he's not going to shut down an entire lineup for an entire game. That's never really been his thing in regards to, you know, Curtis, was we always knew he was susceptible to, you know, giving up home runs. We knew that was a part of his game. But it has come in the most untimely fashion and unfortunately in big time bunches. Rather than giving up solo home runs that you can live with and you can overcome, and no, they're three run home runs. They're multi run driving home runs. And that really puts an offense like the Mariners, who don't score on a consistent basis, in a tough spot.
From the 360 related, what about the fact that the Mariners don't have a team that can recover from a pitcher having one bad inning? that does make it tricky. I mean, a great team is going to start with great starting pitching. And for several days in a row, the Mariners had that with Robbie Ray both starting and kind of ending that streak. And you're right. I mean, but overwhelmingly over the last 4 days, two runs is not a great offense. But over the last several outings, they've had great offense.
Yeah, they've been able to string it together.
They've been able to string it together. Now, again, they did not improve their offense as much as they needed to. So that they have – the thing with the 2022 Mariners is they have such a teeny tiny margin of error that every player not living up to expectations impacts the team in an outsized way.
Yes, 100%. And that comes back to your conversation or your thought about that the team should have done more in the offseason, that the team should have done more in terms of creating depth, in terms of solidifying your starting rotation, in terms of your bullpen, and obviously this lineup. There were opportunities to do it, opportunities to spend, opportunities to make that happen. And again, we're looking at the blockbuster deals, the Trevor Stories, those types of players. It doesn't have to always come in that type of form. It can come through, you know, finding another Adam Frazier, a Kyle Schwarber 2 years ago, a Colton Wong. You know, there are other players like that that can provide legitimate, you know, depth for this lineup that obviously that they need in a big way. But it does hurt you when your two biggest additions this offseason and Robbie Ray and Jesse Winker have not lived up to the billing and have not come through for you the way that you were hoping they would. And that does affect where you're at in the win-loss column. And unfortunately today, they have a chance to change this with this series, and hopefully they come out with a series win. But, Curtis, win percentage, Orioles, Mariners, the Orioles are back on top with a 423 win percentage. Damn. Seattle Mariners, 420. Now, they have a chance to fix that. They have a chance to, you know, get themselves back on top of the Baltimore Orioles
tonight.
Nothing
will be more disappointing than the Mariners trying to be contenders and being worse than the Baltimore Orioles when they met for a series.
Ugh. An Orioles team in the last three full seasons that they played have at best lost 108
What
games.
I will say, the reason the Mariners are where they are is not entirely because Jesse Winker and Robbie Ray are not playing up to expectations. I just want to, that is my opinion. I want to make that, in my opinion, very clear. The reason they are where they are is not only on the shoulders of two players. It's on the shoulders of people in the front office. It's on the shoulders of players underperforming. And again, it's almost on the shoulders of prior regimes that so ruined the perception of this team that it became that much harder to sign free agents. Again, it is a multifaceted problem. And I want to avoid finger pointing at just one or two players and saying that would fix this problem, because you're not going to fix the problem moving forward if you think the problem is Robbie Ray.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And I 100% agree with you. It has been disappointing. There's no question about that, but he has not been the sole reason. So all the anger and frustration shouldn't be going, you know, directly to Robbie Ray. I don't think so at all. And I still hold out hope that he can turn it around and that he can, you know, as he talked about, trust the process and things will get better. I believe that there is absolute potential for that. Why? Because every other outing or every other inning outside of the inning, he's dominant. He's flat out dominant. And that's why this has been so frustrating. As opposed to Jesse Winker, we have not really seen, you know, a string of games or a string of performances where we've seen Jesse Winker provide the power, provide the level of play that, you know, was advertised as he came in here to Seattle.
All right. We are going to get back to this conversation with Brandon Gustafson at 11. We're also going to hear the latest from Jerry DePoto coming up at 10:45. Before we get to any of that, let's get to Headline Rewrites.
Extra, extra, read all about it.
Headline Rewrites.
Presented by Tila Mortgage.
The real story behind the headlines in today's news with Jake and Stacey.
Headline number one, Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers. They defeated Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes in their match play event last night. What's the real headline?
Old dudes play a lot of golf. Real headline. Old dudes got a lot more time to play some golf.
Well,
I'm not surprised at all that Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady defeated Allen and Mahomes.
But it was close. It came all the way down to the wire at the end. Yeah. I mean, give the young guys some credit here, Stacey.
I will do that.
Now, will you? Will you?
Yeah, I guess.
I mean, look, this was something that I hope continues. And, you know, who knows? Maybe it will be Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers are the ones that are, you know, going up against another tandem, trying to take them down. But I just think that this is incredibly fun. And seeing them in a different environment, I think they do a really, really good job with the match. This has been something I did not anticipate being a recurring thing, that it was just going to be this one show, this one experience. But I think they've done a really good job of being able to do it year after year and still make it fun, still make it interesting.
Headline rewrites.
Headline number two, Robinson Cano's time with the Padres appears to be over after only 11 games. What's the real headline?
Much like my own father, Robinson Cano was a Padre for a very short period of time.
Oh, no. Stacey, why do you do this?
It's so funny.
It's
a recurring bit now, and I can't stop it.
I mean, what do we say?
The
what
joke is right there. It writes itself.
It does write itself.
Padre, like, I know Padre for the Padres is more like a
You can
friar.
Joke about it, but Jake and I can't.
I think it's funny. Yeah, you can.
No, I can't.
I think it's funny.
Well, I'm glad
You're
you think
glad
it's funny.
Glad you were able to feel that way.
Yes, I am so happy for you in that regard. Now, Robinson Cano, did you expect this to go any other way?
No.
I mean, look.
What a sad end to a career that was destined for the Hall of Fame.
Yes.
And
then he gets suspended the first time, gets traded, gets suspended for the second time. Like, he has thrown it all away for PEDs.
Well, it's just one of those things where he has made a lot of money in his career, right?
Oh, yeah. He's going to be well off years into the future.
So
the rest of his life.
But legacy.
So, with somebody like that, that's what I wonder. Are they laughing all the way to the bank and saying, you know what, I'm fine with it, whatever. Like, I've made my money, I'm good, and life is good. Or does somebody like Robinson Cano look back at everything that has happened and say, gosh, I messed this up. My legacy, as you said, Stacey, will never be the same. It'll never be what it should have been. And to me, that is an absolute shame, because Robinson Cano not only was a sure Hall of Famer, but you're talking about potentially one of the best second basemen in all of baseball. And threw all of that away. It just, I have a hard time with that, because I just don't understand somebody's thinking.
Well, I think legacy matters to a lot of players. I think that I would imagine that even for Robinson Cano, yes, like, being able to set up your family for generations is always great, and having professionally played baseball is always great and accomplish that dream. But I think most guys want to be in the Hall of Fame. I think most guys want to be remembered as a great player and a great contributor and want to be celebrated. I think that that's a very human reaction. So I have a hard time imagining, maybe I'm wrong, I have a hard time imagining there won't be a little bit of regret on Cano's behalf.
Gosh.
Headline rewrites.
Headline number three, Gonzaga star Drew Timmy has announced he's withdrawing from the NBA draft and will return to Spokane for his senior season. What is the real headline?
Drew will become the first college athlete old enough to play with one of his grandkids.
Congrats.
Very exciting. Here we are clowning Drew Timmy for being, quote, old as a college basketball player when he was born in the year 2000.
Yeah, he's only 21.
We're
but
washed.
It feels like
but
he
it feels
has
like
been
he's 25.
In Gonzaga's yes. starting lineup since Adam Morrison days.
I think since I was a child. It
I
feels
think
like
so.
He's been there.
It is one of those funny things in college basketball where there are some players who have just gone on their normal four-year career, and it feels like they've been there forever.
Like Tyler Hansbrough and Grayson Allen.
Yes, you're like, how do you have another year? Kansas, it was Perry,
Perry
Ellis
yeah.
right? He just played 4 years.
There were a lot of jokes about Perry Ellis that him and James Naismith were at Kansas together.
Because he looked like an old man as a freshman.
He was balding, yeah.
Yes, he was balding. It was just, it was a sad ordeal, Stacey. However, I don't know why, but there are certain players that it just feels like they're never going to leave college basketball. They're just there.
Yeah.
And they're just serving their four years. They're just spending their time doing their thing. And it's like, how do you have another year of eligibility?
I wouldn't even say just college basketball, though obviously that's more noticeable because you don't get as many like four-year starters that are actually potentially going to be great as NBA prospects. But I was thinking of just sports as a whole, an athlete that you look at and you think, he's still here? Like, I think some people might say someone like Frank Gore, but...
He's retiring today, actually.
Yeah, but he's someone who also remained pretty competitive late into his career. So it's not like you were like, that guy?
Yeah, he played till he was 37.
Yeah. Which is insane. What's another athlete where you were like, that guy's still here? Any league.
Well, Nelson Cruz.
Yes.
I mean, he's, what, 42 now? Yeah. He's not having a good year with Washington, by the way. I think this may be the end of Nelson Cruz's
major baseball
career.
But if it happens at 42... Fine.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, if you're
pretty
that
amazing
late
career.
Before it finally catches up to you, I mean,
it makes it all the more impressive that Tom Brady at 42
yeah, that's
is,
a, I think that's that'll be the uncanny. Gold standard. He's like 45 now.
Well, yeah, because that guy doesn't even eat strawberries. Like, he eats like...
He attended college in the 90s.
Oh, my God.
That is...
Like, we all were in elementary school when he was graduating college, heading into the NFL, drafted in the year 2000.
And here he is
that
in better
is
shape than all of us.
That is
still
insane.
Producing
it's
at
still winning a
stupid
Super Bowl.
High level.
The
yeah.
Bucks are favored to win the Super Bowl from the NFC, I
right.
think, over the Rams right
it,
now.
It's pretty incredible, and it's hard to imagine anybody replicating what Tom Brady has done. I mean, Drew Brees physically couldn't do it. Peyton Manning physically couldn't do it.
Drew Brees physically for a while, too, had fallen off.
Yeah, but he, you know, he kept trying to play, right? He kept trying to play through it. Over, you know, this final 3 years of his career, just tried to keep powering through that.
A couple good ones on the text line. Yes. Mackie Jack's text line, 425 says Vince Carter. Yeah,
correct.
He played till he was like 43, 44.
Yeah.
Charles Woodson, I think he played till he was about 40 at Michigan. He was in the same draft class, I think,
yeah.
as Tom Brady, which... I mean, Woodson is already in the Hall of Fame, so that
yeah.
goes to show
yeah, yeah,
how long
yeah.
ago he retired. Yeah, there have been a lot of guys that have hung around, but very few are able to be that productive at the end of their
it's
careers.
It's just unreal. It's unreal. I can't ever get over it. The best are the ones that they aren't starters, they aren't backups, they're just still there, and then you see that person's still in the league, and you go, whoa, that guy. All right, so we are going to get to the latest from Jerry DePoto, who was on with Mike Salk this morning. That coming up in about 30 minutes. Before then, one NFL expert says Baker Mayfield will be a Seahawk by July. That's next.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studio, this is Seattle Sports Station. You're listening to Jake and Stacy,
powered by Kitsap Credit Union.
All right, the latest from Jerry DePoto coming your way in 15 minutes. Before we get to that, one NFL expert says Baker Mayfield will be a Seahawk by July. So I've actually got two cuts here. One, Tim Hasselbeck on Get Up. This is what he had to say about Baker Mayfield and the Seahawks.
It's the Seattle Seahawks. I mean, and the reality is I've kind of felt like all along the path for Baker to get to Seattle is to get released, to end up in Seattle. And then in Seattle, you know, you're in an environment with Pete Carroll in his mantra of compete every day. And that type of, you know, scenario is really the best for Baker to go somewhere where, you know, you're not just a backup. You're not in a situation where the path to play is impossible. But then also for the team, you know, you're creating some competition in an area where there's a need for competition because Drew Lock has not proved himself as a starter. And so it creates that environment.
So you have, he says, Baker Mayfield. He thinks he'll be a Seahawk by the end of the month. And that not only that, the Seahawks will be a great landing spot. There's not much in the way of competition to become a starter, but also just thinks that it would be great overall having like Pete Carroll and that kind of culture in a place where a guy like Baker could use a second chance.
I think that it makes so much sense. It makes so much sense from having Baker Mayfield here if he's cut and why that would be a good fit. I mean, I just think that it would be the ideal scenario for the Seahawks right now. And if Baker Mayfield is able to revive his career and he's healthy and he plays well for the Seahawks, then okay, you find somebody who's on the younger part of their career and probably is not going to get a massive contract that's going to put this team in a tough position.
Sure.
Right? I mean, even with him being a first overall pick, you know, you're not going to fork out $40 million or anywhere. I don't think anywhere close to somebody like a Baker Mayfield.
Absolutely.
If they have one good season or one solid season for the Seattle Seahawks.
No, absolutely not. Would you want Baker Mayfield signed to Seattle were he to be released by the Browns?
Yes.
So you're no longer giving anything up to trade for him. 206-421-3776. That's the Mac and Jack's text line. Send me your answer. Would you want Baker Mayfield here as a Seahawk? 206-421-3776. This is what Bill Barnwell had to say. And pay attention to what comes after the but.
I think it does make sense. I mean, they were playing in a scheme last year in Cleveland the past couple of years that is similar, not identical, but definitely similar to what the Seahawks were running last year and what the Seahawks, I think, want to run is sort of that, you know, version of that Shanahan McVay style offense. So I think that does make sense. And I think I would appeal to Pete Carroll. You know, Pete Carroll's a guy who thrives on competitiveness. He wants his players to be competitive at all times. With Baker Mayfield, you can say what you want about the guy as a player or as a, you know, in terms of his personality, but the guy wants to win. He cares about football and played through injury last year and, you know, didn't play his best football, but he was playing through pain and he had to give him credit for that. So I think there's definitely a fit there. But I think the Seahawks also, they're kind of committed to Drew Lock. I think they really think Drew Lock can be that guy. So I'm skeptical, but I think we're going to have to see what they think about Drew Lock after this season.
That's why he's skeptical. He says that, look, it makes a lot of sense for the Seahawks to acquire Mayfield. It makes a ton of sense. And he spends of a 47 second cut that I just played you guys about 40 seconds talking about why it makes perfect sense. And then he says, but they seem committed to Locke. Mm-hmm. And you know what? They do.
They do. They do seem committed to Locke. And they also feel, Stacey, you've pointed this out for a while now, that you feel very strongly about how Pete Carroll feels about Geno Smith, right? And that they would be very comfortable with Geno Smith being the guy. You have even argued that Geno Smith is the starting quarterback, that he is.
With, I think, how much I think Pete Carroll likes Geno Smith.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I think that both Pete and John really like Drew Lock. I think, though, that, again, maybe it works out. Maybe they are able to, for whatever reason, tap into a part of Drew Lock that we haven't seen since essentially the end of his rookie season. And he's had flashes. It's just never been for an extended period of time. But the problem is the Broncos have also been trying to tap into that with, I would argue, a better roster overall over the last couple of years. And it hasn't worked.
Yeah, I agree. And it's something that I think that if you're looking at the upside of what Drew Lock can be, then, you know, you are excited about that and you're trying to give him every chance to realize that talent and potential because it's very real and it could fit very well into your offense. However, Geno Smith's been here for 4 years. He is somebody that, look, has not had an illustrious career. He has not even really had a flash of a great year in this league. However, Pete Carroll feels confident in Geno Smith and he looked at the last three games last year, particularly the Jags game, and said, all right, as he got his feet underneath him more and more. Now, I would argue that this is a bad Jacksonville Jaguars team. However, as he got his feet underneath him in two games, he had his best performance as a pro in this league in that particular game. Had an unbelievable game.
Mm-hmm.
And so I understand why Pete Carroll could feel confident in moving forward with Geno Smith after that experience. I don't think that that's who he's going to be. Again, an example of taking a small sample size and saying, all right, I think that this guy could provide more of that performance throughout a 17-game season. I think that that is not going to be the case. But overall, if it's Drew Lock, Geno Smith, Baker Mayfield, I don't even think it's a question. It shouldn't be a debate.
Baker's
it shouldn't
ceiling
be open.
Is the highest of the three, and it's not.
And
close.
He's proven it in this league.
I think that what it is
more
is that,
so than any and than those two. It's not even close.
Yes, I think that there are some fans that are really excited about Drew Lock, and they want to feel like Seattle may have found an answer on the cheap. And not only that, but Drew Lock will be forever tied to the Russell Wilson trade. And I think there are a lot of fans that want to feel like they won the trade.
Mm.
They want to feel like Drew Lock worked out and the Seahawks won. Now I think the Seahawks can successfully move on from the trade without necessarily Drew Lock being the answer, like with those two things being different. But Baker Mayfield is, I've no offense to Geno Smith and Drew Lock, frankly, a better quarterback, and he's done it more consistently. Is he the best quarterback in the league? No, but you don't have your pick of those guys. You can get Baker. You can have Drew or Geno, or I don't even know what you can do.
I mean,
make some kind of last second trade.
Yeah, but they won't.
They
won't do that. And this is your opportunity to upgrade. So if there's a lot of Seahawks fans, okay? There's a lot of Seahawks fans that feel like this is a roster. I've seen it. They feel like this is a roster that has a chance to be really good. that has a chance and they're just a quarterback away. I'm not fully buying that. I think that this team is young and they're going to go through their growing pains and hopefully lay the foundation to set themselves up over the next couple years. But if you truly feel that way, how could you go into the season and say, yeah, I'm good with Drew Lock or Geno Smith and pass up on Baker Mayfield, who has gotten a really bad organization, a Cleveland Browns organization, although, as you said, a more talented roster over the last couple years, he helped get them to the playoffs. I mean, how do you take that? With Geno Smith and Drew Lock, who have never gotten their teams to the playoffs, how do you pick that over Baker Mayfield? That logic doesn't make any sense to me.
I mean, I think maybe it becomes then people saying, well, would Baker be your long-term option? To which I would say I would still view Baker as a stopgap.
Yes.
And I still see, like,
correct,
that thing is 2023, ideally you get one of those passers. It would mean having a poor record, which isn't great and is hard to stomach. But I don't see any of these options as the long-term answer, which is why I'm probably looking at Baker saying, yeah, more entertaining, a higher ceiling, like, let's ride.
Yeah,
let's
I agree. And if he surprises you and surpasses expectations, then that's nothing but a positive. But in terms of having a stopgap quarterback, which one would you rather have? It's Baker Mayfield.
Text line overwhelmingly pro Baker as long as he's cut. Most people saying, look, I don't want to pay a pretty penny for him, but heck yes, go Baker. Heck yes, bring in Baker Mayfield. Someone saying they're fine with it, but will the money they have to pay Baker take money away from other positions they need to pay for to acquire? A good question, since quarterback is the priciest position, though. I don't think that would be for this year.
If they cut Baker Mayfield, the Cleveland Browns,
it would not
cut
be 19
Baker.
Million. That's what I'm saying. I think what this person's saying moving forward, but Baker Mayfield, I think you could get on the cheap were he to be released. You're not you're essentially competing with only a handful of other teams. Carolina would probably be looking to him to see what they could do, but
yes.
I mean, I think Seattle would be able to get a competitive offer without sacrificing other roster spots. Baker is a no-brainer. And then 253 saying, I will boycott if Baker Mayfield is a Seahawk.
That's
so,
just silly.
Something
to
keep in mind there. The 253 not very happy
about
it.
Absolutely silly.
All right, the latest from Jerry DePoto on with Mike Salk. That's coming your way next.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studio, this is Seattle Sports Station. You're listening to Jake and Stacy.
Powered by Kitsap Credit Union.
All right, coming up in 15 minutes, we're talking Robbie Ray with Brandon Gustafson of SeattleSports.com. Before we get to that, though, let's talk about the latest from Jerry DePoto, who was on with Mike Salk this morning. Let's see. We'll start with Ty France's hot streak. Here's what DePoto said.
But if he's on the hot streak, it's about a two-year hot streak. He can't possibly continue to deliver, you know, three hits a night in the biggest situations. His level of clutch hitting right now is otherworldly, and you know, and to expect that that's going to be the case every day is pretty unfair. But you know, I say that now, and we really do believe that the hitter you're seeing, the ability to make adjustments, to allow his hands to do the work, and that's the real deal.
It really is unreal. Like in last night's game, now Curtis, correct me if I'm wrong, Taylor Trammell gets on base with what, a double, I think? I'm not entirely,
yeah.
I don't quite remember. You have Cal Raleigh come up, strikes out. You have Mike Ford, who I think he strikes out. I don't quite remember. And then you have Jesse Winker. And then you have Ty France. And Ty France, I just think, like, I see him come up and I'm like, he's going to get a hit. He's going to advance Trammell. It's going to happen. It's just going to happen. And it does.
Yes.
And he does, and he gets a hit. That's being clutch, because I was worried you're going through the lineup and you're saying, oh, you got a runner on base, but I'm so worried about who you're going through right now. And it doesn't matter, because Ty France shows up and, of course, he gets a hit.
Ty France reminds me of that video online of there's a fire going on in the background, and then in the foreground, there's this little girl just on a swing set, just having the time of her life. Just like,
that's Ty France.
Everything's fine with
everything's
me.
Great.
I don't know what you guys are worried about. I'm just over here swinging on my swing set.
Yeah, up there, runners in scoring position, not a problem. Go ahead and get a go-ahead single or RBI single or something. It's just, he obviously didn't do that last night, but did get a hit and did advance a runner. And it's just, he's just been so solid with that. I mean, that clutch factor, as Jerry DePoto said, which feels so impossible to measure sometimes, even though there are literally statistics.
Yeah.
It's just, he's got it.
He does have it. And that is one of the fun things about watching Ty France play. And he's also a hitter that everyone can enjoy. He's not somebody that is a masher, although he's very respectable right now with 7 home runs.
He can mash.
I'm not saying he can't, but I'm just saying that that's not his DNA. That's not what he tries to do. And he would tell you that he's trying to get on base. He's trying to hit, and I love the fact that he is able to hit to all fields, right? He is not just a polar. He is someone that understands how to hit, how to understands how teams are playing him and where the gaps are and where the opportunities are. And he has been able to, you know, really be a throwback hitter in that way. And it's why he's got a .355 batting average right now and a .939 OPS. You look at also right now, he's posting a 2.8 WAR. I mean, gosh, it is so incredibly good, the season that Ty France is having. And one thing I do agree with Jerry Dipoto in that interview is, let's go to cut number 17 here. You know, Mike Salk talked to him about a hot streak, and Dipoto kind of took exception to that.
But if he's on the hot streak, it's about a 2-year hot streak. He can't possibly continue to deliver, you know, three hits a night in the biggest situations. His level of clutch hitting right now is otherworldly. And, you know, and to expect that that's going to be the case every day is pretty unfair. But, you know, I say that now, and we really do believe that the hitter you're seeing, the ability to make adjustments, to allow his hands to do the work, and that's the real deal.
So I'm with him. You can't call it a hot streak. You can't say Ty France is playing out of his mind. He's shown you that he is a pure great hitter, and he, in his, you know, first 2 years of getting serious, real playing time, I think Ty France is showing you exactly who he is. And that's what makes this so incredibly exciting and fun, is that you can bank on Ty France, because this isn't just a hot streak. This is consistency.
If Ty France is exceeding expectations, there's one player who clearly hasn't met them, probably even his own, and that is Jesse Winker. Here's what Dipoto had to say about that.
I think Jesse's trying to figure out the transition into a new ballpark, a new team. That was, you know, I don't want to say a disruptive moment. I think he was excited and remains excited to come to the Mariners. But obviously the first 2 months of the season haven't gone. He's got a tremendous track record. He's irrefutably been an excellent major league hitter through the course of his career. And, you know, a lot of guys, when they come in, they feel the weight of expectation. And I think we see that with some of our guys, frankly, that aren't performing, you know, on par with their career norm.
Now, because I want to move this conversation forward, and Dipoto does just that, here's what he says about how a guy like Winker, in this case, can help himself.
Players are human, and they put a lot of pressure on themselves to deliver. And if you walk in the door and the expectation is that you're the guy who's carrying the 880 or 900 career OPS, and you've been awesome against the right-hand pitching your entire career, and you were an all-star, and, you know, the Major League Network shredder, hedging the number one left fielder in baseball, and you get off to a rough start, which he did, and that you start putting a lot of pressure on yourself to bring it back, and that's tough to overcome. And usually what you see is those players the way they get out of it is just by letting go of the wheel.
Dipoto clearly implying through that about minute-long conversation there that he doesn't think it's mechanics, he doesn't think it's serious regression. He thinks Jesse Winker is exceptionally talented, and clearly that signing him and bringing him into Seattle was the right answer for how to improve, but that maybe Jesse putting expectations on himself and pushing and pressuring himself a little too much here.
I mean, whatever it is, I don't. You got to figure it out. I mean, it's hard to listen to that, you know, from Dipoto, not because he's saying anything wrong, but because at the end of the day, it comes down to simply Jesse Winker being able to put it all together, right? Like, there comes a time where you say, all right, maybe we're going to work on, maybe his timing's a little off, maybe the mechanics of this and that are a little off. But then you get down to the point where it's like, no, Jesse Winker's just got to do it. He's just got to hit. And that is something that when we talked about with Taylor Trammell, we had an awesome interview with Taylor Trammell, by the way. If you missed it, go down the Jake and Stacey podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
Great review.
Five stars only.
If you would be so kind, it helps us out. But, you know, Taylor Trammell talked about the mental side of the game and how that is something that he really had to tap into, you know, last summer, and how much that has really helped him and how much he feels like he is a more mature player. Now, after, you know, really taking that side seriously, and baseball is one of the most mentally taxing sports that you could possibly go through. I think golf would probably be number one because it's just you. It's just you and how humbling golf can be so quickly. And I think baseball is right behind that. And you experience so much failure. How do you overcome that failure? How do you get yourself to be confident in what you're doing and just trust your talent to come through? And right now, Jesse Winker, he's got to be able to find that. He's got to find that in him because this team desperately needs that from him.
All right. We're going to get back to talking about Robbie Ray. Plus, what was something you heard from Ryan Neal that had you fired up, Jake? That's coming up in Four Down Territory in about 30 minutes. Don't go anywhere.